a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. All right, we got a lot to talk about, and thankfully, we've got just the guest for a wide-ranging discussion. Alan Gottlieb going to be with us, the founder of the Second Amendment Foundation. We're going to talk about the Supreme Court. We're going to talk about Hunter Biden's case. We're going to talk about Donald Trump's case, because the Second Amendment Foundation says it is prepared to defend Donald Trump's right to own a firearm. What about others convicted of nonviolent felony offenses? Perhaps even Hunter Biden, depending on what a jury does. Well, let's get right to it. Here's our conversation with Alan Gottlieb. Take a look and a listen. Alan, good Monday to you. Thanks for coming on the program today.
Hey, it's always great to be with you, Cam, and your listeners and viewers. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Now, I will say I was hoping that we might have some news from the Supreme Court to talk about this morning. You know, orders get released from the Thursday conference every Monday morning. Nothing today about either the Illinois gun ban and magazine ban cases, right? Those have been hanging around for at least a month now. And nothing on Antoniuk either. That was heard in conference last Thursday, or at least was scheduled to be heard in conference last Thursday. No announcement from the court today. So let's start there. Is no news good news? What do you think is going on behind the scenes here with the court in these cases?
Well, I think the court's pretty overextended right now. The number of cases on their plate that they're looking to issue decisions in or grant cert petitions. They're really kind of backed up right now. So I can't read a whole lot into it. I don't know. I'd just be speculating. But my hope is that, you know, we get a couple of favorable rulings on Second Amendment issues and a couple of grants of some cert cases that are very important.
Yeah, absolutely. And we know we're going to get some decisions before the end of the month. Well, we think it's going to be before the end of the month, right? The Rahimi case is still pending. Garland versus Cargill is still pending. Which is the bump stock ban case. And, you know, both of these cases, I think, are going to be extremely important to gun owners going forward, depending on what the court does. But the Second Amendment Foundation, you all issued a press release last week talking about defending Donald Trump's gun rights. And Rahimi may very well have a direct impact on Donald Trump, maybe even Hunter Biden, depends on what a jury does. But this could be the case where the court kind of spells out, okay, here's the standard. If you're going to be depriving people of their right to keep and bear arms, right? That could come out of Rahimi.
It could come out of Rahimi. Of course, as we all know, Rahimi is not an ideal plaintiff for gun rights himself. And so this case is going to be very interesting. If I had to take a wild guess, I'd say it's going to be a very narrow decision and pretty much as applied to Rahimi and not do a whole lot. So I think a lot of people on both sides may be a little disappointed in the decision from the Supreme Court because it really won't spell out or clarify a whole lot. That's my guess. I could be wrong.
Okay. Yeah. And again, I mean, this is all speculation at this point, right? We do know that the court has held on to about a half dozen other prohibited persons cases, and they're not all similar to Rahimi, right? So you've got Range versus Garland. That's the case of Brian Range, the Pennsylvanian who was convicted of falsifying his income on a food stamp application like 20 plus years ago. That was a misdemeanor offense. He got probation for it. But under Pennsylvania law, it was a crime that was punishable by more than a year in prison. So he lost his right to own a firearm. You've got U.S. versus Daniels. Patrick Darnell Daniels was arrested. He had marijuana and guns in his car in Mississippi. He admitted to smoking marijuana. I think he said using marijuana about 14 days a month. 46 months in federal prison is what Patrick Darnell Daniels was sentenced to. What do you make of the fact that the court has held on to those cases for several months? To me, that indicates that Rahimi is going to say something about the process by which someone's determined to be a prohibited person. But again, that's speculation on my part.
Yeah, it is. You know, the Second Amendment Foundation has won two major cases dealing with the restoration of gun rights for people who, you know, who are convicted of crimes that surely are nonviolent, both out of Pennsylvania as well. In federal court, we went up to the Federal Court of Appeals and won it in bonk in the Federal Court of Appeals, and then the government didn't appeal it to the Supreme Court, if I'm remembering right, or if they did, the Supreme Court didn't take those cases. And those spoke favorably to gun rights. So, it's really hard for me to say. Rahimi is a bit of a complicated case. I mean, his due process rights, that you can really make an argument, you know, were sort of violated by this law. He really, you know, wasn't convicted of something that should determine he shouldn't be able to own firearms at all, but he probably should have been, but probably, you know, some of the things he did weren't prosecuted. And so, I mean, it's a little messy. It's really hard for me to say how clear the Supreme Court could be with any kind of decision on it at this juncture. But there are a lot of other important cases that are pending before them, you know, right now, that could clarify Second Amendment rights a whole lot more than Rahimi.
Absolutely. You know, Garland versus Cargill, I brought that up a second ago. That's the bump stock ban case, right? And yeah,
that isn't a direct Second Amendment case per se. It's more
right.
As a federal government, you know, without congressional approval, could redefine what a gun is, so to speak, or what a machine gun is in this case. So they're not going to be decided directly on Second Amendment grounds, in my opinion. I think again, they'll be favorable to our positions. But again, they're complicated cases, and they're not directly head-on on gun rights.
No, you're right about that. I mean, this is an APA challenge, right? Administrative Procedures Act challenge to the bump stock ban. But as you say, it's the federal government's contention that if you attach this non-mechanical bump stock to a semi-automatic firearm, you in essence turn that semi-automatic firearm into a machine gun. It seems to me that if the court says no, that's not the case, that might implicate the Seventh Circuit cases, right? The challenge to the so-called assault ban and magazine ban in Illinois, because the Seventh Circuit has said that AR-15s, those semi-automatic firearms should be treated like they're machine guns, whether or not there's a bump stock attached, right? So maybe this is wishful thinking on my part, but I look at the Cargill case as a potential vehicle for the court to say, putting a bump stock on a semi-automatic firearm doesn't turn it into a machine gun, and you cannot treat semi-automatic firearms like they're machine guns under federal law, because they're not. Now that might, you know, just be some dicta coming down that the court would suggest, but it seems to me like Garland versus Cargill could provide an avenue for the court to weigh in, at least indirectly, on some of these assault weapon bans.
I don't think they're going to use it to weigh in on an assault ban directly. I think they're going to take an assault ban case to really weigh in on it. Mm-hmm. But again, it's going to point things more in our direction, I believe. And again, the assault ban is being challenged, you know, under Second Amendment grounds. The bump stock's being challenged under the American Procedures Act, that the federal government doesn't have the right to redefine what a gun is without congressional approval. The courts very well may say if it had congressional approval, it would be legal. But that's not what the case before them is.
Right. Okay. You know, and these are just a couple of the cases. As you say, as Second Amendment Foundation, you've got over 50 active lawsuits in various stages around the country. What are some of the issues, Alan, that you expect we're going to see some maybe action in either the trial court level or the appellate court level in the coming months? Are there any cases that are really high on your radar?
Yeah, we have currently 60 cases going
on
in the courts, and I think 61 might get filed this week, but I can't talk about it yet.
come on. Give us a little clue. Can you give us a hint?
State of California.
This is okay. Well, that's a wide open book there. Okay. All right.
Okay. But again, looking at what's coming up, we have at this juncture in the appeals court in the Fifth Circuit, the Armbrace case having oral arguments coming up in a month or so. And likewise, in the Ninth Circuit in California, we have their one gun a month law coming up for oral arguments. So those are two cases the Second Amendment Foundation has won at the trial court level. Now we're in the appeals court level holding the oral arguments coming up. So those are two big cases that in the next couple of months are going to get a lot of attention.
What's your advice to gun owners who are frustrated at the pace of progress since Bruin? Well, obviously, we've seen some great lower court decisions. We've seen some bad ones, too. But we continue to see, you know, localities like New York City, Los Angeles, states like Illinois, New Jersey, Massachusetts continue to put up these roadblocks between we the people and our Second Amendment rights. And I'm curious, do you hear that frustration from gun owners, or are they cognizant of the fact that the court moves on court time? And this is not going to be as you know, swift a resolution in our favor as we would like.
I hear the frustration from gun owners an awful lot. But let me just say that I personally have that frustration myself. When you're at the pinnacle of the attack, and you've got all these cases filed in court, and the courts moves as slow as they do. It's hard not to be impatient and not to get frustrated with it. You know, when a right is delayed is a right denied, it's a problem, and the court should be moving a lot faster on these cases. But in all fairness here, since Bruin, decision by the Supreme Court that we won, an awful lot of court cases on the lower court levels, while some states have, thumbed their noses at it, we've won an awful lot of cases. It's opened up our playing field tremendously. It's allowed us to file the 60 current cases that we have going on right now. So we've made up a lot of ground, and we planted a lot of seeds that are going to bloom. So I guess we have to be a little patient. And that's what I tell your viewers and your listeners. Like it or not, the courts do move, like you mentioned, on court time. But we are making a lot of progress. And right now, the only thing impeding and stopping the gun grabbers, so to speak, from, gun prohibitionists from pushing their agenda down our throat is what we've won in the courts.
Well, that's absolutely right. And, as frustrating as the last couple of years have been, I try to keep in mind that we went from 2010 to 2022 without the court accepting a Second Amendment case, right? That was 12 long years. Since Bruin, granted, it's been the cases that the government has requested that they hear, but the court has accepted a couple of cases dealing with our right to keep your arms. There are so many more that are pending. And to me, the fact that the court hasn't just rejected the Illinois ban cases, as they did the Maryland challenge that was pending before the court a month ago, they rejected cert in Bianchi, but they've kept on to these Illinois cases. And that does tell me that the court is taking an interest in these cases. We don't know what the court's going to do, but if the court simply was unwilling to hear this case now, felt it was too early, they probably would have said that a few weeks ago, right?
Yeah, I think so. The Bianchi case in Maryland was basically not heard because it was an emergency motion that Second Amendment Foundation had filed. Because in that case, it was already at the Supreme Court. They held it, and they reversed and remanded it back down to the lower court to be reconsidered based on the Bruin decision. And the courts have messed it up. And with the appeal, we had oral arguments at the appeals court before the appeals court could rule, which I think they would have ruled in our favor. What happened was they got pulled in bonk, and then it stalled on the en banc panel, and the Maryland case was just hanging out there with nothing happening. And so we moved it to the Supreme Court, hoping they'd take it now, but they really wanted to go through the whole appeal process first. And eventually either that case is going to come back to them, or the Illinois case will be heard and take care of that one as well. There's also ones out of California. There's ones out of other states, New Jersey, other places. So, the court's primed. It's just a matter of time until they do hear one of these cases. And again, we're frustrated because it's taking too long.
Absolutely. All right. Last question for you. I know that Second Amendment Foundation says that you're prepared to defend Donald Trump's right to keep and bear arms. If Hunter Biden is convicted of being an unlawful user of drugs who possessed a firearm and who lied about that status on his 4473, would Second Amendment Foundation work to see that Hunter Biden can regain his Second Amendment rights?
Well, let me fudge on my answer just a hair with you on that. I prefer to do the Donald Trump one if they came after his guns and took his guns away or prosecuted him for owning the guns, because he didn't lie on any form. He got the guns legally. He's had the guns forever. He's had a permit in New York to have the guns in his home and to carry firearms for self-protection. The crime that's committed is, if he was guilty of it and it was a legitimate charge, the bottom line is that somebody shouldn't lose their Second Amendment rights forever for a processed nonviolent crime that when the individual has shown that there's no likelihood at all that he'd misuse those firearms or commit a crime with them. It goes to the heart of the unconstitutionality of the laws that are in place that need to be taken down, because they affect all of us, not just Donald Trump, but you, me, and all your listeners and your viewers. And so the bottom line is I much prefer that one. In the Hunter Biden case, you've got a person that did lie on their forms and that does deal with active, crack cocaine use. There's a
nonviolent, though, still nonviolent, right?
It's still nonviolent. I'm not sure, quite frankly, that under the Bruin theory of that the Supreme Court ruled on what could be legal or not legal for gun laws, that it meets the muster as being constitutional. But I have a hard time defending Hunter Biden or Joe Biden's son when you have a family that's been sticking pins in our gun rights forever, not defending our rights, but trying to take our rights away from us. You know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, I guess, and they deserve to live under the laws that they supported. In the case of Donald Trump, the gun rights supporter, and they're going after him because it's a way of going after all of us.
All right. Alan Gottlieb with the Second Amendment Foundation. Thank you so much for joining me on the program today, sir. It's always good talking with you.
Good talking with you too, Cam. Thank you.
You bet. We'll see you soon. My thanks to Alan for joining us on the program today. Now, listen, before we get started with our recidivist report, our good deed of the day, and our armed citizen story, let's talk about this for just 1 second. At the very heart of our democracy lies a principle that we hold sacred, free speech. It's the cornerstone that supports every freedom we cherish. Yet in today's digital age, discussions about our wealth, our rights, and our future are being silenced or overshadowed in mainstream narratives, leaving many feeling voiceless in conversations that are crucial to our financial independence and security. This is where Wealth Protection Research steps in, armed with a mission that's never been more critical. Wealth Protection Research is not a financial advisory firm. They're defenders of free speech, committed to giving a voice to the silenced. Now, Wealth Protection Research tirelessly seeks out financial experts, the voices that challenge prevailing narratives, especially as we navigate the uncertainties of the 2024 election. Wealth Protection Research has created a 2024 Election Wealth Protection Report. This free report highlights the three best ideas for protecting and growing your money heading into the 2024 election. It contains ideas the mainstream media won't touch, and listeners can get it completely free. Just text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. If you believe in the sanctity of free speech and the importance of financial freedom, then act now. Text IDEAS, I-D-E-A-S, to 76626 to claim your free copy of this 2024 Election Protection Report. It's time to widen the scope of what we're told, to hear the ideas the establishment doesn't think you can handle, and to take control of our financial destinies. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. All right. Let us now turn to today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Indianapolis, Indiana. Released from jail with a plea deal, robber rearrested after armed robbery. That's right, an 18-year-old who was in and out of jail for about 18 months, according to WISH-TV. Before pleading guilty to a robbery charge, has been arrested again, according to court records in Indianapolis police. Donwin Townsley, arrested on the charge of robbery by the use of or threatening force when he was 16 years old, back in November of 2021. He had initially been released from jail while this case waited its way through court, according to WISH-TV, but he was taken into custody and jailed again in October of 2022 for what court records called a pretrial release violation. Okay. As it turns out, that pretrial release violation was allegedly another robbery. Back in February, Townsley was sentenced in Marion Superior Court. He got no extra jail time for the pretrial release violation. He was given 160 days that he had already been incarcerated, basically given a time served, and then he was put on probation and home detention, ordered to get a mental health exam as well as a GED. They also waived all of his court fees because Townsley was indigent. And then on May 17th, the court was notified, according to WISH, that Townsley had violated his probation. Online court records gave no details, but a judge issued a rearrest warrant for Townsley and ruled that he could not be released from jail on bond. A person had reported an armed robbery about 2 p.m. last Thursday in the 9,000 block of Meadowlark Drive. You got businesses, you got a church there, you got some apartments. Indianapolis Metropolitan Police said in a social media post on Friday, shortly after taking the victim's statement, officers left the scene in an attempt to locate the suspect. Subsequently, the officers located and detained 18-year-old Donwin Townsley, an individual who was already wanted on an outstanding robbery warrant. Townsley, a serious violent felon due to a previous robbery conviction, found to be in possession of a handgun with an extended magazine and a long rifle at the time that he was detained. Officers arrested Townsley for his active robbery warrant as well as possession of a firearm by a serious violent felon. Townsley due back in Marion Superior Court on Tuesday for a hearing on the probation violation. But again, 160 days, man. That was it for this original armed robbery. Now, I realize Townsley, again, was a juvenile at the time. But we've got a big problem with juveniles committing really serious offenses. And the juvenile justice system not coming up with really serious consequences. And that would appear to be the case for young Mr. Townsley, who now has reached the age of majority and is now facing charges in adult court from here on out. All right, today's armed citizen story from Ohio, where an off-duty sheriff's officer ended up shooting an intruder after finding the suspect inside of his home. And not what you want to see when you return home at night. This was in Reading, Ohio. A Hamilton County deputy got back to his home in Reading early Sunday and found a stranger inside his home. Shot the man once in the leg after a confrontation, according to the Hamilton County Sheriff's Office. The suspect, 26-year-old Daryl Williams, ran away but was apprehended shortly thereafter, arrested on an aggravated burglary charge, taken to a local hospital for treatment of his injuries. The shooting happened around 5:30 Sunday morning, according to Kyla Woods with the Sheriff's Department there in Hamilton County. Police radio traffic indicated that Williams had called someone nearby. They tried to use his number to find him. Jake Bratcher, who lives in the area, said, when I woke up around 5:30, I heard all the police officers come. About 8 to 10 parked right in front, got the dogs out, the canine unit, and then they got the drones out. Neighbor who didn't want to show her face told Fox 19 she didn't hear any gunshots, but she did hear the response when the police arrived at the scene. Brocker said he'd never seen anything like it on the street before. He said, you know, it's wild to get to see it. People as close and tight-knit as we are. He said, you hope for people to be better. You hope somebody sees it and goes, yeah, we're not going to mess around here anymore. Maybe. He also said it's lit a fire under himself as well. He says it definitely does light a fire under you. Like, holy crap, we got to be safer. We got to get a lot more cautious and aware. Yes, that is always the case, I think. But maybe Mr. Brocker, maybe he's not yet a gun owner, will decide it's time to exercise his own Second Amendment rights. Because, you know, if an intruder's going to show up at an off-duty sheriff's deputy's house, no reason why he couldn't have picked any other home on that block. All right, finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, unable to do the right thing. Speaking about bringing out the drones and the dogs, a man who drove off an embankment in Oregon ended up in a creek, saved thanks in part to one of his four-legged companions. As CBS reports, a man and his four dogs accidentally drove off an embankment over the weekend. And this was in a fairly remote area. Baker County Sheriff's Office said that the incident happened, this weekend. It was actually last week, in June the 2nd. Brandon Garrett was on his way to his camp that afternoon, but he never made it. Police got a call the following morning from Garrett's brother. Family members had found his vehicle, but they couldn't reach it as it was in a quote, steep, brushy ravine. They apparently were able to know where to look because one of Garrett's dogs, who was in the truck at the time, got out and ran the 4 miles to that camp, according to the sheriff, which alerted the rest of the party that something was wrong. Meanwhile, Garrett was able to get out of the truck and crawl about 100 yards from the vehicle where he spent the night. The three remaining dogs were located alive at the crash scene. Brandon Garrett was located alive as well, but again, about 100 yards away from the vehicle. Sheriff provided first aid. Other responders had to use chainsaws to clear a path in order to get down to the site. Ultimately, Garrett was secured in a rescue basket connected to a rope system, pulled out, transported by helicopter to a hospital. Don't know Garrett's condition in recent days, but it looks like he is going to recover from his injuries, thanks in part, again, to his four-legged companion, thanks in part to the two-legged heroes who showed up on the scene to rescue him. I just couldn't help but think as I ran across this story, there's no way. I don't think. Maybe my dogs would surprise me. There's no way I don't think that my dog would run, either of my dogs would run 4 miles to get help. They would probably lick my face, lay down beside me, maybe wander off into the woods. But yeah, Garrett, you really do have man's best friends there. And Brandon Garrett, and I hope that Brandon and his pups are able to recover from their injuries. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program. As always, I'm looking forward to being back with you again tomorrow, where our scheduled guest is Doug Hamlin, the new Executive Vice President of the National Rifle Association, going to be sitting down with us for a one-on-one interview. Looking forward to talking with Doug. tomorrow. Looking forward to sharing that with you on Tuesday's Bearing Arms Cam and Company. But make sure you're checking out BearingArms.com throughout the day today. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information, including the potential verdict in the Hunter Biden trial in Delaware. And, of course, armed citizen stories, legislation, litigation, it's all there for you at BearingArms.com. If you like what you see, I'd encourage you to become a VIP or VIP Gold member as well. Just use the promo code SAVEAMERICA, and you can get 50% off your membership. We'll see you back here tomorrow for 2A Tuesday. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.